Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Joe Hackman on Blog Talk Radio, and today I'm extremely fortunate to be speaking with two of my favorite people in social media, and I only say in social media because we haven't had the opportunity to meet yet, but we're going to be talking about measurement and monitoring in social media. So my panelists today are Shanali Burke of Shanali Burke Consulting. Hello, Shanali. And Ginny Dietrich of Armit Dietrich. So let me give you each an opportunity. Just introduce yourself. Just give me your 30 to 60 second version. You guys have been guests before, but I think it'd be good for anyone new listening in. Go ahead and start, Shanali.
Well, thank you, Jill, and hello, Miss Ginny. Hey, everyone.
Hi,
listening. I am, as Joe said, maybe you didn't say Joe, but I run my own PR agency as an agency of one in the D.C. area. I'm pretty into measurement as well, because of which I run a biweekly Twitter chat called Measure PR, which is a lot of fun. And I really like focusing on strategic communication that are integrated and are correlated to business outcomes. So I love thinking and talking and figuring out measurement.
Awesome. Ginny?
I'm kind of jamming to the intro music, actually, so I was wondering if I could just go back to that. It was quite
nice.
Well,
you know what? You can actually get that music. That is a friend of mine's jazz band. And
really?
I'm happy. Oh, yeah. That's...
Yeah, you'll have to send that
to
me.
Brewing
nice.
Company.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're an excellent local jazz band here in Northern California. But I will tell them that you liked
it. Yes, please do. I definitely like that music. I'm Ginny Dietrich. I own an agency in Chicago. And I also author Spin Flux. So we talk a lot about measurement. We measure things for our clients. But it's not something that we talk about externally very often, just because it's one of those things that there are experts like Shanali and Katie Payne that do a very nice job for our industry on talking about those things. So I'm interested to learn something from you today.
Oh, my goodness. Pressure.
Okay, well, the pressure's definitely on Shanali then. But we won't put too much pressure on you, Shanali. So,
hey, you know, I have
okay.
three dogs over here who'll bark down the wires if you do, so watch it.
Well, maybe they will also participate, provide some input as well, and that would be just fine. So let's go ahead and start out by just, let's give a layperson's definition of measurement. Shanali, why don't you start out, and then Ginny, I'll let you comment on what Shanali says, and maybe you can add some additional insight to it.
Okay.
So, to start with, I think, you know, excuse me, people will talk about measurement in general, and the truth is that measurement is factored into pretty much every aspect of our lives. If we, you know, we're measuring success in any aspect of our life. If you are on a weight loss program or in a fitness program, you're going to measure it by how you achieve those goals that you have. You set goals for yourself, and then you have a plan, and you track your progress, and then you decide whether or not you succeeded. The problem that I see in PR, and I include social media in that, is that there is a lot of confusion about what tools to use. There is a lot of confusion about what measurement is, and often that becomes a confusion between monitoring and measurement, because monitoring is one step to measurement, but it is not measurement per se. And the real issue that I see is that we don't focus by and large on actually measuring outcomes and impact. So when we are really talking about measurement, we should be looking at the goals that we've set for our clients or our campaigns, what the measurable objectives are, and that means that they have to be benchmarked and that they have to be time-bound. And then we should be monitoring our progress towards those goals. And those goals ultimately should be related to business outcomes, because if they're not, then it's just measurement for measurement's sake, which is pretty pointless.
Excellent.
Yeah, and I agree with that. You know, as a business owner, I think it's pretty hard for PR people and people in the social media space initially to understand measurement, because we've never been tied, as professionals, we've never been tied to business results. It's all about awareness and visibility, and in the past it's been media impressions and advertising equivalencies. And now, because the landscape has changed so much, we're having to learn how to measure to business results. And PR professionals by nature are right-brained, which means they don't do numbers well. So it's a pretty big struggle, and I don't think very many people understand that some of the work that we do can and do move the needle in terms of driving sales, not just brand awareness.
Well, that's excellent. So we know that this isn't really a popular subject, and now we probably know why, and that is that basically even the people in the industry might struggle a little bit with it and struggle to understand it and maybe misidentify it, I guess would be a safe way to describe it.
Yeah, and I'm, you know, I think it goes back to a couple of things, and Ginny and other people have been having this conversation on SpinSucks and other blogs, and I've been referring to it every now and then on Waxing on Lyrical, which is my blog as well, is that part of the problem is our definition of PR. You know, so many people, including many, many practitioners, will just define PR as publicity. And so if you are going to therefore measure, quote-unquote, publicity, obviously you're going to measure impressions and how much, quote-unquote, ink you generated. But true PR, and again, I include social media in that, really goes to the heart of building relationships with your audiences and then motivating those audiences to do something that is going to benefit the business. So if we start recalibrating our definition of PR, then it becomes much easier to, or rather it makes more sense when you start thinking of measurable outcomes as not just the outcomes of a campaign, but how those are going to impact business outcomes as well. And ideally there should be some kind of groundwork and research on which you base your campaigns and you say, okay, I'm going to try and achieve this because my research and the other business units have told me and we've seen that X leads to Y, or X can correlate to Y. So I won't go on because it's a bit of a soapbox for me, but I think those are a couple of reasons that measurement itself is misunderstood or thought to be confusing.
Very good. And Ginny, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, we've been talking about this as there's probably like 20 of us PR professionals who have blogs, and we've been talking about that very thing for the past few weeks, because what we're finding is, you know, there was a New York Times blogger who writes for the small business area called Ask the Boss, and what he typically blogs about is what it's like to build and open a restaurant and then run that restaurant into growing it into something that, you know, provides income for a lot of families. But a couple of weeks ago he decided that he was going to blog about how much he hates PR people. And I think the quote he used was PR, he did say that PR people make him crazy and that PR people take a croissant and twist it into a pretzel but tell you it's still a croissant. And it's just, that sort of is what created this whole conversation, because Shanali is right. PR is not just publicity, and so many people, I would guess the mass majority of people think, oh, if you're not getting stories in the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal, then you're not doing your job. And that's just not PR. And the celebrity industry has done us a big disservice because of that, because that's what they do, is publicity.
Mm. Yeah,
and that's
so really, so it's not a, I guess we could conclude very, very easily that it's definitely not a one-size-fits-all then, and that perhaps what people see, like many things, they'll see what celebrities are doing or what, you know, companies are doing to weasel their way into these big papers and whatnot. And then they just assume that that's just what it is.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what they do, is they assume that that's what it is, because the problem with our industry is it's not tangible. You know, with an ad, you see it, you feel it, you touch it. You have people say, oh, I saw your ad, I really liked it, or I really hated it. You know, you get some sort of reaction from it because it's tangible. With PR, in general, it's behind the scenes. And somebody, I wish I could remember off the top of my head who said it, but somebody on the blog said the other day, PR people should be heard but not seen. And we are very good at being behind the scenes and, you know, communicating with employees and creating events and working through crisis and doing these things, but you never see, unless the PR person is a spokesperson, which doesn't happen all the time, you hardly ever see the professional. And that's the problem, is it's not tangible. You can't hold it and feel it and touch it. And because of that, because we're right-brained people, creative people, we have a hard time taking what we do and measuring it to business growth.
So I'm assuming then there are tools that can be used so that you can provide your clients, and individual companies can use the same tools to actually figure out, are we being effective? Where are we making an impact? And let's maybe start talking about that a little bit. What are some of the top tools that are used today to demonstrate success and to measure success using social media and other mediums to get the word out for a business benefit?
So to start with, I don't think there is a one-size-fits-all tool.
Right.
And
right.
I think that's another problem, is that people will see a successful case study or they'll see a successful campaign and they'll say, oh, now I'm just going to apply the same measures to my campaign, which is really a silly thing to do because you're basically setting yourself up for failure. So as an example, I have a potential new client that wants to engage me and my team to engage in some digital outreach as part of a larger campaign. And so when we started talking about measurable outcomes, because that's what I wanted written into the agreement as well, they said, well, you know, what should they be? They had initially given me some during preliminary discussions. And then they came back and said, well, can you give us, you know, a benchmark, or can you give us a number to shoot for based on your experience in the field, etc.? And I said, no, I can't, because your situation is going to be completely different to anybody else's. And if you are going to compare yourself to a business just by virtue of the fact that you're similar businesses, without factoring in the other circumstances that surround you specifically, then you're probably setting yourself up for failure. What you should do is go back and look at X, Y, and Z. For example, if you are trying to drive awareness, or if you're trying to drive web traffic, what has the history been over the last 3 months or 6 months?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then look at, you know, and say you haven't had any outreach, or you've had 2 out of 6 possible components of outreach. Then let's set a target based on what that is, and so on. There are some great tools out there in terms of monitoring, you know, for you to be able to look at Twitter and Facebook and all that stuff. Hootsuite just introduced an upgraded version,
new
analytics package today, which is very interesting. I haven't really sat and played with it, but they bring in Google Analytics and Facebook and Twitter and so on, and you can set up your dashboard. But again, every single organization has to set its own benchmarks and has to set its own goals. So one of the things that I try to really, really stress, and I think I'm stressing it here as well, is that there's just no one-size-fits-all. You can look at, based on what you're trying to achieve and what your goals are, select the tools that are going to work for that. For example, if you're trying to measure outtakes, which is basically what people are taking away from a campaign, you really have to ask them. You know, you have to see if there is aided and or unaided recall. The only way to do that is by doing surveys. If you want to get qualitative data, you're going to have to do focus groups and so on. So it all depends on what you are trying to achieve, and you've got to use the tools accordingly.
Jenny?
Totally agree, and there's not a cookie cutter approach, but I will tell you some of the things that we do to help. We look at Google Analytics, and we'll set some benchmarks, and we'll do some listening and monitoring to figure out what works and what doesn't. We have a client who makes instruments for big machinery and big equipment, and they are dying to get into the social space. So we said, okay, hang on a second. Let's not get you on Twitter and Facebook. We know you want to do that, and you've got some people on staff that are passionate about doing it. Let's take a look at what's going on. And for the first time in 3 years, we got everything set up. We used Spiral 16. We got everything set up in there, and nothing came back.
Wow.
Literally nothing. No competitors, no industry, nothing. And then we started digging further into it, and we realized that their traffic is nice on our website, but it's all direct traffic. Nobody's even searching for them. So they have no organic Google juice at all. So we said we have two opportunities here. You can either not worry about the social web because there's nothing out there, or you can take the opportunity to start forging the path. But if you take the opportunity to start forging the path, you will create a leadership position for yourself, but it's going to take a long time because you're going to be the first one out there.
Right.
And so that's what we're looking at now, is strategically, does it make sense? And we're measuring it based on, or we're setting up the benchmarks and the milestones based on the lack of content that we were able to find. So it like Shanali said, it really depends on where you are.
And the other thing, and my guess is that you're already doing this, Ginny, and for anyone in a similar situation is, I mean, that's a really, really good place to be in a way, like you said, because they're starting from nothing. So they have the opportunity to really make it or, you know, totally screw it up. And if Danny were on the call, he'd say, you know, come on, yo.
Well, I was waiting for someone to do that.
Had to throw in the comment, you know, Danny, we miss you.
Speak for yourself.
And the other really great opportunity that they have is to really learn from competitors in their space. And that's where a listening dashboard can come in very handy. You set up your keywords and so on, and you really see or start to see who is getting traction. What they're getting traction around, you know, is it good, is it bad, where are the opportunities for you to really kind of dive in. Listening is a hugely important part of any of this stuff, and it can really be amazing if you work it in the long run.
Well, this is really good. So the picture that I'm getting then is that, number one, you need to be really clear about what it is that your objectives are. Number two, you should have some basis to measure what's already there for that, to get at least some historical data point to compare the new results to. And then number three, you shouldn't have an expectation of results. You have to be cautious about your expectations of results.
I think you have to be cautious, and I think you have to be realistic. So, for example, in the example that Ginny gave, if you've never done anything in the social space, you can't expect to go from zero to a gazillion in 3 months, because that's just not realistic. So, and then the kinds of goals that you're going to set, you know, are they awareness goals, are they outcome goals? They're going to be different, which is why it's really important to track your progress as well and see how you're doing. And I was going to say something else, and I've forgotten, so Ginny picked it up from
there. Well, that part sounded good.
Well done. It'll come back to you, and when it does,
I hope so. When it
know.
Does, just interrupt me.
Yeah, just interrupt us. So, okay, well, so this is great. This is really from the industry perspective, from the PR perspective, you guys have talked about some really good points. Now, let's give a rundown of just name five common mechanisms that you use to measure. You know, obviously without giving up any trade secrets, if you have something that you feel is a competitive advantage that may be lesser known that you don't really want to share, that's fine, but maybe just discuss maybe five individual or present five individual tools or methods that are used to measure the effectiveness. And I realize it varies. You can vary them based on how diverse the types of measurement that are done. So why don't you start, Jenny?
Oh, I get to start. Okay. You know, for some clients, we'll measure strictly traffic. And the example that I like to use from that perspective is, you know, we do monthly webinars. And we have a goal of a 4% conversion rate based on our traffic that goes to our webinar page. So we actually track how many people go to that page and how many people we convert to sales from that page. So it's a separate link page from the blog, and it has all the webinar information on there. You can buy directly from there, all that stuff. And we track that. So initially we started with like a 1% conversion rate, and we've increased it every month because we were blowing that out of the water. So now I think we're up to like a 6% conversion rate, which is our goal. So that's very easy to track through Google Analytics. For another client, we are doing QR codes, and we actually have had them print a QR code on their packaging because they have a new what's called raisins, and they're sort of sugar-coated raisins. It sounds disgusting, but it's actually really good. But they're sort of a nutritious snack, and so we're using the races throughout the country during the summer to do product sampling, but we wanted a way to measure it, and you can't really measure trial and use of something that you're giving away. So we put QR codes on the back, and we're driving people to the Facebook page to then buy samples or to gift samples to their friends through Facebook, and that's how we'll measure that. That campaign doesn't start until May, so we're sort of on the front end of that. The other thing we do is landing pages. So we'll attach specific landing pages to specific search engine marketing campaigns and look to see what works best. We'll test different ad copy. We test different links. We test different items on the landing pages just to see what kinds of things work. And those are usually the most successful because you can actually see how much traffic you're driving and what kinds of information you're getting from the people that are coming there and what kinds of leads. Now, the downside to that is we can drive all sorts of leads that are qualified, but if the sales team doesn't pick up on it and convert it, we're sometimes held accountable for that. So there's a lot of education on the front end to say, okay, we can't actually make your sales guys convert these things. We can give them to them, but they're the ones that have to do it. So those are probably three of the big things that we're doing right now.
Okay, that's pretty cool. Those are all great.
Yeah, and I would, you know, I pretty much say what Ginny said.
Copycat. Okay.
You know, there's very, very little that you can't do now that Google Analytics is free. Of course, it's been free for a while, with things like QR codes coming in, landing pages, specific URLs, campaign URLs. You can set up campaigns within your analytics if you want to track specific things. The really important thing is to, number one, do that. Number two, try and make the correlation. Ginny talked about the example between the webinars, using the example of the webinars and the conversion. You know, that's a great way to do it. And then the education is a huge part of it because, just as Jenny said, you know, you can bring a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. So
right.
The water's got to have some really good horse food tasting stuff in it for it to want to drink. So PR and social media professionals can do all the cool stuff and, you know, get buzz and blah, blah, blah. But then if the conversion mechanisms aren't in place or they're not good, it's going to fall flat on his face. And I think that's another reason that PR pros are frightened of measurement, because they're frightened of being held accountable for sales, for example, or for conversions,
right,
and so on. And the truth is that a lot of that is not within their control. And, you know, there's always a bit of territorialism when it comes to the thing. You know, the web people want to handle the website, and the marketing people want to handle marketing, and so on and so forth. And so it's really, really important to work together with different business units or with everyone within the client's organization who's going to be responsible for not just building the awareness and driving it, but then actually taking those leads and converting them. And the other thing that I will say, though, and this is not directly related to your question, Joe, but, you know, stream of consciousness, is that we often focus on sales, sign-ups, and so on as outcomes. And, of course, those are some outcomes, but sometimes you want to have different outcomes. You want to see, for example, you know, were you able to keep costs down? Were you able to save money in some way? Were you able to reduce turnover, for example? So kind of going back to the bit about it being really important to customize your objectives, it's very important to look at what the business goals are, and you can pretty much find those in the business's strategic plan, if it's a decent strategic plan, and then work backwards from there.
Hmm. Okay, well, I mean, that kind of gives people a good, I think a really good context and way to look at it. So let's talk a little bit about Google Analytics. How big of a role, when you guys do measurement as far as traffic and things like that, has it become basically, because I'm not really aware of really any good alternatives to Google Analytics at this point, is it pretty much the universal tool as far as analyzing traffic to a website?
Yeah, I mean, that's what we use. That's our number one tool for sure.
Well, the advantage of the Google Analytics, obviously, is that it's free. You know, you've got Omniture and Web Trends and other companies. And as far as I know, I don't really use those because a lot of what I use depends on what the client is willing to pay for. And pretty much everybody has Google Analytics. But there are other companies that also provide similar services that, you know, that could have more advanced analytics in there. Another company that I've come across fairly recently is StatCounter, and I've actually just installed it on my blog. And there is a free level, and then after that, you know, you pay if you want to. And I haven't been able to look at it too deeply because I installed it very recently. I should say Herwin Casiano, who is one of my bloggers and tech guru, installed it for me because I'm very clueless on the tech side of things. But that's really interesting. It's got some really, really in-depth analytics, so you might want to check that out.
Very good. Ginny, any other suggestions along those lines or experience with other products if you were to say that there are other alternatives on the market possibly or things that maybe some clients you have used in the past? Or?
Not that I can think of. I mean, I think we tend to use the same tracking and monitoring tools. I mean, Google, I don't want this to become a big ad for Google, but their alerts and their monitoring and their analytics is all so good that there's no real reason to use anything else.
Yeah.
It's interesting that they've sort of become the de facto standard because looking back when it was pretty much Web Trends was it for the longest time.
Yeah.
And now to have that be sort of a sideline, maybe some people use that is kind of interesting. But it'll be, that's one of the things, I mean, you both know, I tend to try to look at things a lot from the tech side, and I'll look at individual apps to see what they do differently, and I'm always curious about that, and I know some listeners might be as well. Have either of you had any experience with Legit, L-I-J-I-T?
No, not me.
Blog?
I've heard about it, but I have not done anything with it.
It's kind of an interesting. In fact, it works as a plugin for WordPress as well. If you're on your WordPress blog, but basically, it'll replace the search function on your website on your blog.
Huh.
But they provide actually some decent analytics as well. So they provide you with weekly reports with traffic and things like that. I found it kind of interesting. I find the search function a little bit frustrating at times. It's not, surprisingly enough, it's not even as good as the built-in WordPress one, which is really kind of unfortunate given that it does provide some very interesting analytics to look at. So that might be something that you might want to check out. I'm going to definitely check out StatCounter. I wrote that down, so I appreciate it.
I know that Apture, if you install the Apture toolbar, that will also provide you weekly reports. And it is interesting because it'll tell you how many people searched using the Apture toolbar, and you can kind of see the shares and so on. not just for the overall site, but for specific pages and each blog. But, you know, with all of these things is not the problem, but I think the issue that all of them run into is that they'll measure discrete things as a separate thing. So it really takes some doing to pull it all together. And I think that's the problem that most people run into. They're looking for a dashboard or something that will pull everything together that, you know, is fully built, and all they have to do is kind of flip the switch. And as far as I know, that doesn't exist.
Yeah, you know what? That is something that people are always asking for, with also with social media apps as well. And it's really a problem because everything changes so frequently. It's really not conducive to that kind of a format. So basically, anybody who's in that space, like Hootsuite or any, you know, companies like them, they really have to make a lot of adjustments on a very regular basis.
Yeah,
to stay ahead of the curve. So
I mean, speaking of Hootsuite and today's release of its new analytics, you know, so they integrate Facebook Insights and your Google Analytics and so on, but then when it comes to Twitter, they're basically just going to track hourly links. So what happens if someone uses Bitly instead, or Trim, or, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? So I think that's what I mean by this is a problem that pretty much any of these apps or tools is going to run into, is that obviously from a market point of view, they want people to use their tool. So
right.
They're going to say, well, this is what we're going to measure. But that's not going to really give you a true picture of everything that's being shared and so on.
Yeah, I think this Hootsuite analytics is going to be huge. I actually just poked around a little bit today with it. And one of the things that I thought that was really impressive was the fact that they bring the Google Analytics in and then they let you overlay tweets.
Mm-hmm.
From the different accounts that are associated with your Hootsuite account.
Weren't they doing that before, though?
You know what? They didn't have the... I don't think they had the Google Analytics until today, if I'm not mistaken.
No, they did. Unless... Well, I have a pro plan, so...
I turned on the Google Analytics today because I had heard about that they had updated their analytics.
Mm-hmm.
Before, when I went into their analytics, I didn't see enough there to even stick around. So, but I think that's really powerful, being able to overlay tweets, because if, for example, I go to my business's website that has Google Analytics and I overlay my tweets and I overlay my company's account's tweets to see if there's any correlation between the Twitter activity and the blog, and seeing that in a visual format could be helpful.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it,
yeah.
I'm you may be right. It might just be that was already there.
I can't remember. Now I'm probably just making stuff up.
I don't think so. So let's talk a little bit about, Ginny, you mentioned the use of QR codes, and I think that's a pretty cool thing. That technology seems to have gotten a lot of momentum in the last 4 or 5 months.
Yeah.
Can you think of any kind of mainstream campaigns that have had a significant impact that have maybe inspired you guys to implement this, or is this something you just looked at it and go, okay, this totally makes sense, we need to do this?
You want to know where it came from, honestly?
Sure.
The client, I'm on the phone with the client, and he's saying, okay, you guys, we really got to think about how to measure this. And I'm thinking, how the heck are we going to measure samples? Like, we're sending product samples to marathon coordinators, and they're putting them in the goodie bags. And all of a sudden I went, QR codes. So that's how it came up. I mean, it's not like
it just
we have
came
huge
out
experience.
Out of this.
I mean, we use them in our newsletter every month, so we're accustomed to using them. But, you know, it's not like it was some big light bulb or anything.
Well, that's cool, though. I mean, that's realistic, and that's the reality. So
we actually had
Stephanie
Trumas guest blog for us yesterday and about QR codes, and she talks about Macy's using their Backstage Pass, and they're running TV commercials TV commercials and full-page ads starring the QR codes front and center. So you can scan it either on your television or in the newspaper, and then you're sent somewhere else. So I would pay attention to what Macy's is doing. She also said that Calvin Klein, Ralph Lauren, and some other mainstream brands and retailers have embraced them.
Wow, that's a big deal.
Yeah. You know, I remember when I was in London, of course I had to throw in the London reference, when I was in London a few months ago, we were walking around the Brick Lane area, and it was really interesting because I saw this little piece of graffiti, though it wasn't really graffiti, it was like an ad on a wall, and I think it was actually for a graphic art studio. And they had four or five different icons showing, basically representing what they do, and at the end of it, a QR code. And I thought that was really smart because that particular area of London is very, very artsy. So they're placing it where their target audience is and really trying to see how many people are paying attention.
I love that. I love that.
That is cool.
I think we'll probably get some overload on it. Like, we were out having champagne and dessert one night, some girlfriends and I. And
oh, aren't you fancy champagne and dessert?
I know. Well, I had to throw that in since you're in London.
That's what I get for bringing up London.
The restaurant on the bill gave us a QR code. So we were like, oh, let's check out the QR code. And it just sent us to the website. And we were like, oh, come on. We just totally ruined their analytics. And they didn't even give us anything for it. So I think, you know, people just got to have to figure out how they work and not to overload the masses with them.
And I think, you know, with all of this stuff, you've just got to test. You've got to try it use it and see what's working and what's not. I mean, nothing is going to just be set in stone.
Well, isn't a lot of it, though, wouldn't you say it's just like when you're telling people about being present in all these different mediums? It's about there's an audience there that it appeals to, and you want to appeal to that audience.
Yeah.
And sure, there's experimentation to it, but, I mean, there's really, I don't think QR codes, I think, I honestly think that's a relatively small market right now.
Yeah.
That would be that's just my opinion.
You mean you think we're living in our bubble?
No, I think you're cutting edge. I think you didn't have a lot of other ways to track in this particular example. And I think the use of a QR code was really smart thing to do. But I think of your respondents or the people that actually react to it using the QR code may not really reflect the overall impact. But you had no way to measure that anyway.
Sure.
Yeah, no, you're
so
right.
You might as
and,
well, something's better than nothing, right?
Yeah, and you know, and also, I mean, I'm seeing QR codes come up more and more, but they've been around in Japan for a while now. I mean, they're really, really big over there. It's also over here connected to the rise of mobile, you know, because the more people have camera phones and smartphones, the more marketers are going to try and reach their audiences via mobile, which is why I think now QR codes are coming so much into focus.
Okay, well,
I don't know. I guess
You know, it'll be interesting to see how they do get utilized and how mainstream they become. And I agree, though, it's one of those things. At some point, somebody's going to overdo it. That's
just
inevitable.
Like everything else, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Just like everything else, yeah. Some is good, more is better. I think that's the American way, isn't it?
It is the American way.
So let's talk a little bit about this. You guys mentioned the use of landing pages, and I think that's a really great thing because, well, for anyone that's listening that may not be aware, but in Google Analytics, basically, you can look at the analytics for individual pages, and those pages don't necessarily have to be indexed.
Right.
So they can kind of be hidden away. And then you know when people access it that they accessed it through your campaign. So how many, you know, what's a typical scenario in these types of things? Do you guys have a number of landing pages set up? For the different ad copy, or do you point a lot of different ads to the same one. How demanding are your clients as far as the correlation there? Excuse me.
You know, for us, it just depends on the client. You know, with search engine marketing specifically, because you can it pays for itself. So it's not like you're going to spend a lot of money and hope that there are going to be some results, because you're paying by click. So what our job is not to create this big black hole of paying Google for your clicks, but rather finding ways to test different messages, different ad copy, different filters and different qualifiers in order to only bring the people that are qualified leads. So let's say that you have, let me give an example. Let's say that you're selling USB drives and you do it in mass. So you're not looking for somebody who wants to go pick up a USB drive at Best Buy, but you're looking for somebody who's trying to buy 1,000 USB drives with their logo on it. Ad copy would give like two value ads and then say have the qualifier on there that says 1,000 case minimum or something like that, so that you're not getting people that are only looking for one. You're not going to have them click on that. So we test a lot of that stuff out so that our clients don't have, like I said, they don't have this black hole of paying Google just because people are clicking on their ads. And then, depending on what it is, we usually have a different landing page for each ad.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. I think that's a really good gem there about sort of qualifying them by placing criteria that would filter out some of
right.
the content.
And then you're going to have your competitors that click on it just to make you pay for it, but that happens.
Shanali, any comment on that?
Nope. All Jenny.
All right.
Let's go to Paris now.
Paris. All right. So when's the last time you were in Paris, Jenny?
Oh, probably 5 years ago.
5 years
ago? It
wasn't
a couple of months ago like London.
That's too long ago.
I know.
So where were you exciting a couple months ago? Chicago?
Atlanta?
Well, at least you've been on the road. That's all right. You're getting out there.
Well, you were just
in
Toronto.
I've never been to London.
I was in Toronto. I got to make fun of Danny Brown to his face. It was awesome.
That is pretty cool.
It was
How
awesome.
Was that podcast?
You know, it was really good. They had like 1,400 people there, and it's free.
Wow.
So it's 2 days of sessions where they bring in these experts, and it's free.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it's very cool.
1,400 people, that's a lot.
1,400
That's a good
people.
Turnout.
That's a really good turnout.
How many of them would you say were Canadian, and how many of them were traveled there to attend?
I would say most of them were Canadian. In one of the sessions that I was speaking at, I asked if there were any Americans, and I was the only one.
Wow.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of people interested in podcasting in Canada.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's evolved from podcasting. It's all social media. Like Danny talked about, he did a blogging 101 panel. He and Ian Spodek and I did a disclosure, and, you know, the Canadians don't have the FTC or the ASA coming down on them yet, but they soon will have regulations like we do in the UK does. So we talked about that. And then we also did a live Inside PR recording, which was really fun because the audience got to participate.
Oh, that's neat.
That is cool.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah. I look forward to doing more kind of live type events. The only thing is logistics, and it can be
it
really
wasn't that bad.
It wasn't that bad.
Uh-uh. Are either of you doing South by Southwest?
Not me.
Me either.
No.
Boo.
Boo. I don't. That's one of the things I decided to do more this year is actually I'd try to go to something. So I'm going to go to SobCon.
Oh, you are. I heard great things about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did.
It's supposed to be really good. And I met Liz last year, and she's a class act. She's really cool. And I thought the stuff she was telling me about it just seemed like a no-brainer. It seemed like something I should definitely participate in.
But, Chicago at the end of April.
End of April. So, Jenny, if you're around, I'll definitely be looking you up when I'm there.
Yes, you better.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's funny because Chicago's kind of a – I have several other friends from social media in Chicago, which is kind of cool. So
yeah, there's
fun.
A nice little hub of us here.
Definitely. And then
cool.
You have Shanali's in the D.C. hub, and there's some great – I have some great connections in D.C. as well.
Yeah, you need to make it to the East Coast here.
Well, you know what, and I probably will eventually to something because I have family in Virginia.
Oh,
not
cool.
Too far from East Coast.
Cool.
Yeah, so it's on my list kind of maybe 2012, we'll see. I don't travel a lot every year, honestly.
This is on my list, 2012.
I'll be there in 2016.
Yeah, 2012. Yeah.
And if anyone's listening, they're going like, what the hell are these people
doing? I know,
about?
I like how we went from measuring to travel plans.
Yeah, well, at least we didn't go to cow manure. Oh,
uh-oh.
I did it.
Uh-oh.
Yeah,
oh, no.
Frogs.
I didn't. Well, you know, Danny knew he was going to be the brunt of jokes for not
he
being
did.
Here.
He did. We warned
so
him.
That's just the consequences for his actions. But, well, you know what? I honestly, I think you guys really gave a great kind of basis, I think, for measurement and understanding measurement from an extremely qualified, experienced point of view, and really that was my objective, was to try to give people an opportunity to really wrap their head around it, to understand it in simple terms, and really, honestly, it is about business. So if there's really not, unless you're an ego tracker, you know, unless you're interested in using some of the electronic tools to measure your ego and how great you are and whatever, how many followers you have here and there and whatnot. Really, your use of measurement in this discussion is really strictly for practical business outcomes, and that's what I think really people need. And I think beyond that, there's plenty of ways to see how many badges you have on Foursquare and all that good stuff.
So, Joe, if I read between the lines, you're disappointed that neither one of us talked about clout, and that's how you measure success?
You know, I was going to say that, but I'm saving it for the blog article that says that.
Okay.
I don't know why, but my guest didn't get that clout is it. And when I said measurement, I wanted to hear about clout, damn it. Not at all, in fact.
You guys, you got to better prepare us.
Let's talk about that for a moment or two. I know there's been a lot of talk, there's been a lot of conversation about clout, but just for anyone that might happen to be listening, because one of the things that I've learned from feedback I've gotten from my podcast is that a lot of my listeners are not what you would consider insiders or that kind of thing, but they're just normal people that are looking for information about a given subject. So who wants to give kind of a – do one of you feel like talking about clout?
Hang on a sec. Are you saying that we're not normal people?
No, you are insiders.
Oh.
You guys are in the know.
That, Shanali, we're insiders.
Insiders.
Right. You are practitioners. You are participants. And I'm not going to throw around the terms that people don't like to be called.
Yes. Thank you.
Expert gurus, whatever. I'll save that for the people that Jenny writes about in her blog.
I've been on my soapbox lately, I guess.
Well, that's kind of the cool thing about your blog and about Danny Brown's blog, is that basically you guys pretty much tell it the way you see it. And
oh, well, thank you for not including me in that show.
Well, you're less of a, you don't really, Well, you know what? You said the same thing,
so
but
deep
it's
in a joke. You cannot even get out.
I know I'm in trouble. Can you tell? I'm trying to think of a way to recover right now. No, I love reading Waxing on Lyrical. You know, I comment there all the time.
I love reading it too.
Oh, everyone's being so nice now.
Except that you
well,
just got
it's
a
true,
flaming,
though.
I do what?
Flaming comment.
Yes, you did.
About an hour ago.
I know. I didn't go there because I figured you would.
I did.
Oh, good. I've been trying to pay attention to the podcast, to Joe's show, and I was like,
oh, I saw it before the show.
Oh, okay.
See, now I have to come up with a way to summarize what's great about Waxing on the Circle. I think the main thing with your blog, Shanali, is that you have a regular group of guest bloggers, whereas Jenny has sort of a really a cyclical. There's a lot of different people that write now and then, but yours is a regular group of people. So it's kind of there's a little more cohesion on that. But how's that? Is that pretty good?
Hey, Joe, I'd stop talking if I were you.
Oh, crap.
So, Cloud.
Right. So, Cloud.
So, Cloud, yeah. So, Shanali, tell me what stinks about Cloud and what's good about Cloud.
Okay, so I feel bad.
What's it good for? What's it not good for?
Cloud is great for an ego. You know, any of these tools, whether it's Cloud, whether it's Twitterlizer, whether it's Peer Index, whether it's any of these quote-unquote influence tools or influence measuring tools, have to be taken in context. My main problem with Cloud, and I've said it so many times, but I'm going to say it again, I have no grudge against them. I don't know anyone there. I have received Cloud perks occasionally. I've written about them a couple times. I haven't other times. Joe Fernandez has never visited Waxing and Lyrical because no doubt he does not admire the cohesion that you do, Joe. But it is being taken as the be-all and end-all of influence when it's not. It brands itself as the standard for influence, and I think that's a huge mistake because when you're talking about influence, you've got to look at online and offline. And if you're going to look at online influence, then number one, you should say you are or you're going to be, or you know, you're trying to be the standard for online influence. And then if you're going to factor in online influence, you've got to look at a wide swath of online activity, which, to my knowledge, Cloud does not do.
They do Facebook and Twitter.
They are trying, I think. They're not very open about it. I think they're trying now, again, this is guesswork on my part, to incorporate blogs and so on in it, but it still seems to be very hit and miss. You know, we don't really know what goes into the ranking. I'm not saying give me, you know, Cloud secret algorithm or anything, but at least tell us what you factor in. So until they do that, one can only base one's understanding on what they show you, and what they show you in the dashboard is Facebook and Twitter. As opposed to something like that, I would prefer to look at Tracker as one of the tools I would use to compile a list of influencers and then base my outreach on that. Because when you look at a Tracker list, and I have been given a demo of Tracker, I've been pretty impressed by it, and I'm going to be speaking with the CEO tomorrow. They're not just looking at your Twitter and your Facebook, but they're looking at your blog, your website, LinkedIn, blah, blah, blah. You know, there's a whole bunch of social properties, pretty much every social property that they could find, but they will incorporate. It is all based on how much of your activity corresponds to keywords. So the other really cool thing about that, I think, is that anyone who goes in and uses Tracker as a client can set up a really customized list, and you do the hard work beforehand of identifying your keywords, your hashtags, and so on. But then you're really looking at people who are talking and tweeting and Facebooking and blogging, etc., about that area. So it becomes a much more refined list for you to go out and start approaching these people, as opposed to, and there are no numbers, you know, so you're not, your Tracker number is not 66 or whatever, as opposed to something like Cloud, where
you have a number. And if anyone's just going to go by a number, I think that's really a mistake.
Here's the issue I have with clout.
Okay.
My clout score is higher than Jay Leno's.
Do you think that you're more influential on Facebook and Twitter than Jay Leno?
No. I don't think I'm more influential than Jay Leno, period.
Well, I'm just saying on Facebook and Twitter,
I think if Jay Leno tweeted something that he wanted the world to know, he would be much more influential than me, even though he doesn't spend any time there.
I'm just looking at his Frizz account.
Okay, we're holding that now. Yeah, and that's the thing.
Jay Leno.
So it goes back to context.
Right.
Yeah. When clout started taking a lot of the heat recently, I kind of thought about it because I actually care what my clout score is. Not a lot, but I care enough to go check periodically. And maybe that's the ego part of it. But I look at it this way. This is my take on it. My take is that if I wasn't doing anything, if I was not doing any work around social media, I wouldn't care what my clout score was.
Right, I agree
with
that.
What was the difference? Mm-hmm. Who cares?
Yeah.
But because some people actually come to me to actually help them with some aspects of social media, you know what? I better know how to use Twitter because Twitter is one of the top tools used by people that use social media to forward, you know, business and personal objectives, right? So if I didn't have a decent clout score, wouldn't that make me kind of a not really credible in a way?
Well, yes and no. I mean, it would depend on how much attention the people you're trying to reach in terms of business prospects pay attention to stuff like that. And that's the danger, is that if they're not educated about how these scores do and don't work, and that they shouldn't just be taking a number into account, but they should also be looking at your experience, your work ethic, you know, how much you know about the industry.
Right.
Then they could be swayed simply by that score. But, yeah, that is one of the reasons that cloud has so many people up in arms, or people go and see what their scores are. But, I mean, you know, I think the last time I looked, I had a higher cloud score than Lee Oden, who is just a guru as far as I'm concerned. I mean that in a good way, not just in terms of PR, but in terms of SEO and measurement. I mean, and really, really a wonderful person. And it's so ridiculous to me that just as Ginny's score is higher than Jay Leno's, mine would be higher than Lee Oden, because it's not factoring in the context.
Right.
Well,
and the other thing, I'm sorry, before I forget, because now I'm on my soapbox again, the other thing that I really worry about with score-based tools is the influence that they are going to have on people's behavior and activity, not just in terms of, well, somebody gets or doesn't get a job or gets or doesn't get an upgraded hotel room because of their cloud score, but how much emphasis they are going to put into tweeting more actively or, you know, being on Facebook more simply for the sake of it or simply for the sake of the score, as opposed to really providing value, engaging. Because, I mean, Joe, you and I have talked about this before. You drop off Twitter for a few days and your cloud score just goes down.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get back up and then it slowly starts climbing again. So, you know, how many people, and I don't know, this is conjecture on my part, but I'm sure there are people out there who are doing this so that their score goes up simply for the sake of the score. And that really worries me.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I would say well said. I mean, that's a really good criticism of that. I mean, the whole idea behind clout being... Maybe what it is, maybe this is it. Maybe they overstep their boundary, not just a little bit, but a whole lot, when they say, you know, when they created the standard for influences, their tagline. I think that almost comes across, maybe this is where the pushback is it really comes across as arrogant and really overreaching as far as what they're really telling you about clout. Because maybe this. Here's an idea. You're both creative and whatnot. What should clout say that they do? Because we know that they're not the standard for influence. That's basically been proven wrong. I mean, there's way too much evidence to the contrary. What is clout? What do they actually do? What do you think their tagline should be?
I don't know if I have an opinion on what their tagline should be, but I would love to see them start to take in other context into consideration. I'd love to see them target and segment the people that are using the social web and take that into context. So, like, the example that I use is I got, I don't even know what it was, some Kobe Bryant poster offer or something, and it has nothing to do with me or what I blog about or even what I tweet about. And so I'd love to see them start to segment and target more specifically, because if you could figure out that Shanali works with first-time bloggers in helping them really understand how to build a blog, how to grow a blog, what to write about, how often to write. You know, if you can understand that and you start giving her some tools to give away to her readers or to help her readers, that's going to be influential. If you figure out that I do a lot of business book reviews and drive a lot of sales for business book authors, that's pretty influential. But, you know, sending me a Kobe Bryant poster, like, that's just a waste of money. What the heck am I going to do with that?
Yeah.
Actually, maybe I'll hang it up in my office.
That sounds more like the people using the tool are using it wrong.
But I don't think they're using it wrong. I think that's how, I mean, they're looking at, what they're doing is they're looking at it because clout is the tool for influence. They're looking at the people with the high clout scores and saying, you get these things. Well, that doesn't help me, and it doesn't help you.
Right.
Yeah. And to some extent, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, do you think the bad clock might still be wrong one time a day, though? I mean, basically, if they take people with a clout score over 70, for example, and just send everybody a Kobe Bryant poster, somebody's going to like it, right?
Yeah, but at what cost? And when you're talking about measurement,
yeah,
that's terrible measurement.
That's true, but if even one of them actually truly is influential and they actually say something, maybe it pays for the rest of them. I don't know. I'm just...
I'll
yeah,
send you
I'm
my Kobe Bryant poster.
And, you know, to some extent, I can understand that. It's like in traditional media relations, you know, you kind of identify, or even in blogger relations, you identify your top list outlets or blogs that you want to go for, but then you're also going to identify secondary or, and again, I'm not saying any specific one is top or secondary. Everybody has to decide what they are, what those are for themselves. So that when you average it out, you're trying to generate as much awareness as you can. There must be, I have no idea why you got the Kobe Bryant poster, Ginny. But I remember when, I think Clout's first promotion was with Virgin, and they were doing a LA Toronto flight. Yeah.
Yeah.
And as far as I remember, it was pretty much influencers, quote unquote, however they decided who those were in those two cities. So there must be something that at least the companies are doing to segment further. But I do think it would be very valuable if there was a way for Clout themselves to make the differentiation public, you know, just as Tracker can do, or I think even Peer Index tries to do it. It'll kind of list the topics and the areas that you talk about or based on which they are giving you your score. Because otherwise it does seem very hit and miss.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Well, I think you guys have some great ideas, and you made me think of something, but we might have to save the topic for another day. Because I just looked down and it's already after, 4 o'clock your time, and we agreed we'd do an hour and it's already over an hour. I apologize. I totally lost track of time. But I know one of the things that we have had conversations with about, I know Ginny and I had a conversation about it via blog comments, and I think Shanali is probably at least viewing a conversation that's going on right now, and I'm not going to say where, about involving a community and decisions and directing a product and that kind of thing. And really that's something that you're both expressing some really good input for clout. Certainly a lot of people have been making a lot of suggestions publicly for clout, and this has gone on in other cases, and it's led to the failure of some companies. And I think that would be an interesting topic for another day if you guys want to try to take that one on.
You betcha.
Heck yeah.
The power of the community. How to benefit from the community. Well, very good. Well, it's been certainly great chatting with both of you again, and I appreciate all the experience and insight that you brought to this subject today. And you know, I didn't miss. I'll pretend like I didn't miss any. It's been nice having you on board too. But certainly, you guys had plenty of. You filled the shoes very well, and certainly it wasn't. His insights weren't needed, but I'm sure he could have made us laugh a few times.
Oh, Danny. Too bad for clients.
Yeah, poor guy's got to make a living.
That's
he's got
right.
a family to support. All right. Well, hey, well, thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And just one last time, where can we find you, Shanali?
At waxingunlyrical.com or on Twitter as @Shanali, S-H-O-N-A-L-I.
And Jenny, where can we find you?
Spinsucks.com on Twitter too, but my name is impossible to spell, so.
G-I-N-I-D-I-E-T-R-I-C-H?
That's correct.
Whoa, right on. And I'm Joe Hackman, or Hackman J on Twitter, and I blog at joesgonesocial.com. Of course, if you're listening to this, you probably know that already, or at least see the link in on the episode here. But I want to thank everyone for listening, and hope you've enjoyed the panel discussion today, and have a wonderful day. Bye.